This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. We are less than a week to the election, and almost a million people have already lined up to vote in the state of North Carolina, a figure that is ahead of turnout from last midterm election. The numbers are high despite changes to voting laws that decrease the time for early voting. In this last weekend, how are the candidates making their final pushes, and what's at stake, both here in North Carolina and nationally? Joining us again at this very favorite time of year for him, political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Frank, the absolute best time of the year.
So listen, final stretch now. Hagen-Tillis, let's start at that race. Television, radio ads abound. My phone is ringing off the hook. What matters now? What do you do in this final phase in these last few days? How, or does it? Does the pitch and the push change at all for either candidate?
Well, I don't think going up on the air any longer, anymore, is going to affect anybody. I think for the most part, people's minds are made up. I can't imagine what you guys are going through with all the negativity. It, obviously, you know this by turning on your TV, but it's clearly the most negative and most expensive Senate race in the country in this year. But, I mean, if you're Tillis and Hagen, what you do is you really got to make sure your guys get out and vote, and that means knocking on doors and ringing, you know, and just going out in the street. We could talk about all, you know, you can blanket the airwaves as much as you want, but you really got to get that out, you know, that walk the street, put the feet on the pavement kind of effort to get the vote out, and that is crucial.
Yeah, I tell you, the ads have gotten to the point where I'm starting to hate myself. It's gotten intense.
Imagine.
But what about turnout? We see a far greater turnout in this election than we did the last midterm. Is that an indication of anything, early voter turnout being high? There's a lot of interest on this race. Can you glean anything? Can you tell anything about the outcome from early turnout?
It's hard to, because for the most part, Democrats do prefer early voting, and that's why Democratic state legislatures push it around the country. Republicans try to curtail it, whereas Republican voters usually the ones who mostly come out and vote on Election Day, the first Tuesday after the first Monday. But I am struck by the high numbers of Democrats who have come out in early voting in North Carolina this year compared to 2010. And, of course, 2010 was that big Tea Party wave when the Democratic Party was very disheartened. Now, a lot of people say that the Democrats are disheartened this election as well. President Obama's numbers are down. The Democrats are kind of running away from him in many districts. But looking at the North Carolina early voting numbers, it seems like they could be. I mean, I don't know what it means. I don't know what it means for Tuesday, but it certainly means that the Democrats may not be as disheartened as a lot of people would let us believe.
Well, that may be because the president's numbers are down. About the only institution that scores worse is the North Carolina legislature. And both candidates, at least in the Senate race, are saying that their opponent is a surrogate and a standard bearer for the other, both for President Obama and the legislature. Is that how you see this race playing out?
You've exactly defined the differences between the North Carolina Senate race. The Republicans say it's a referendum on President Obama. The Democrats and Kay Hagan say it's a referendum on Tom Tillis and the Republican-led state legislature.
This is the one, of course, topping races to watch across the nation. What's at stake here in this North Carolina Senate race as the Republicans make their push to regain control?
Well, I mean, look, from the beginning, of course, we know the Republicans need a net gain of 6. Kay Hagan was always on that list of vulnerable incumbents, Democratic incumbents. It's a state that while it went for President Obama, Barack Obama in 2008, it switched to the Republicans in 2012, and there's a sense that there is a Republican momentum there, and that's why Hagan was always on that list. But again, as poor as President Obama's numbers are in the state, the legislature's numbers are not much better. It generated a tremendous amount of opposition, and actually both sides are really just, you know, clamoring against each other, blaming the other side for what's going wrong. But, I mean, on paper, the Republicans can win the Senate without North Carolina, but they certainly would like to have it in their column.
All right. Well, let's move to the congressional races. The 6th congressional candidates held their final debate this week. Tell us about that race, Ken.
Well, this is the race, of course, that Howard Coble is leaving after 30 years. It's the first time the seat is open since he was first elected in 1984. And it was a pretty ugly, I love saying that, a Republican primary where the establishment, Phil Berger Jr., candidate, did not win the primary, basically a Baptist, former Baptist minister, Mark Walker, won the primary, and so the Republican Party is kind of split. Laura Field is a Democrat who's, I think, a first-time candidate. Mm-hmm. She's really running against the Tea Party, calling Walker an extremist, an anti-abortion on even in cases of rape, incest, and life of the mother, although Walker said that's not exactly true. Now, it's a very evenly divided district. If you look at the numbers, there are as many Democrats as there are Republicans, and theoretically, it gives the Democrats a shot to pick up the seat, and they could, but we also should remember President Obama just got to only 41% of the vote in the district in 2012, and if anything, I suspect his numbers are worse than that. So, like the Senate race, Field is running against the Republican extremist. Walker is running against Field being a clone of President Obama.
And she, of course, has tried to distance herself from the president in that particular race.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, if you listen to the debate, she says, I'm not for amnesty. I'm not for this amnesty that a lot of Democrats are supporting with quotes around the word amnesty on immigration. I thought the rollout of the Affordable Care Act was an absolute bust, and I'm holding President Obama accountable. That's part of what many Democrats around the country are doing, and they're saying that, I'm a Democrat, but I'm not down the line of President Obama, and here are the reasons, here are the ways I separate myself. Ultimately, I don't think that helps the Democrats. I think you really want to, you don't want to push away the loyal Democrats, but at the same time, you have to be very cognizant of the numbers that Obama has in the district.
Now, in the second district race between Clay Aiken and Renee Elmers, a traditionally very conservative district, and polls show Elmers are in the lead. Does Aiken have a chance? How much separates the two?
Well, first of all, it's only become a Republican district since that massive redistricting. Renee Elmers barely won it in 2010, and then the legislature redrew the district in 2011 to make it much more Republican, much more conservative. This had been one of the top races being watched around the country for the longest time. But Clay Aiken, of course, having the national celebrity, has gotten him a lot of money. He's running financially very close to Renee Elmers. But as you say, it's a very conservative district. Aiken does have a lot of work to do to make it close, but it certainly got more attention than any other Democrat could have possibly gotten in that district.
I'm talking with political junkie Ken Rudin today on The State of Things. Ken, what about the 7th district? Tell us about how that race is shaping up.
Well, that's a district. I mean, Mike McIntyre is a blue dog Democrat, but the Republicans drew the district really to knock out all those Democratic parts of the district. And 2 years ago, David Rauser came in with, I think, 654 votes of McIntyre. McIntyre decided to retire this year. The polls show that this is, if any seat is going to be a likely pickup in North Carolina, it's the 7th with David Rauser. But, of course, we still have voters to make that decision on Tuesday.
In my introduction, I said that early voting numbers are high despite the decreased time. Ken, is it because of the increased time, and how much of this race, this election, is coming down to race? There is a perception that the voter ID law and voter restrictions passed by the legislature were aimed at repressing the African-American vote. There was changes in criminal law that also rankled African-American communities. Is race playing a part in this race in the last days of the campaigns?
Well, I mean, you could make the case that there are very many legitimate reasons why race has become an issue if you look at the state legislature. But if you go to the 12th district, that's that wacky redrawn district that was first drawn in 1992 to elect an African-American Democrat, and Mel Watt held that seat for so long. Alma Adams, a longtime state senator who's running for the seat now, I mean, she called Tom Tillis an Uncle Tom. And first of all, I don't know how you call a conservative Republican Uncle Tom, but again, Republicans say this is the latest case where Democrats are talking about race. There are indications with some Democrats around the country that you have to vote Democratic because you don't want more Fergusons, obviously blaming Republicans on Ferguson, although that's interesting because, well, the Republicans have nothing to do with Ferguson. It's not a D or an R issue. It's just the state of race relations in this country. And then you have Charlie Rangel, people like that, talking about, well, you know, the Klan is going to be very happy if the Republicans win, or the Civil War is still going on, or we still have slavery. It's no question that the Democrats desperately need to rebuild their coalition that elected Obama twice in 08 and then 12 by getting African-Americans, women, unmarried women, Latinos out. But again, I don't know. I'm not convinced this is the way to do it, because as many blacks who come to the polls because of these appeals could also, you know, get Republicans counterbalancing and reacting to that as well. But it's clearly one of the Democratic tactics that they need if they're going to win on Tuesday.
All right. Well, we will take a look and keep posted. And I know you're going to be awake until Wednesday morning, Ken. I just know that's how it's going to go for you. Thank you, as
but
always.
I will be sleeping in the month of December.
The December hibernation. Ken Rudin, political junkie. Early voting ends tomorrow, as early as noon in some places, though you should check with the elections board to find out where and when in your county it ends, because the times are different. It's a little more confusing this year, as you know. But early voting does end tomorrow. So if you're planning to do that, that's it. Otherwise, it's Tuesday. Check our website, stateofthings.org, for a link to your polling site. Just ahead, a father's memoir traces his response and his journey through his daughter's disability. You'll listen to it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.